This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening, and check this out.
It is not appropriate to invade a country and at the end of a barrel of a gun dictate what you are trying to achieve. That is not 21st century G8 major nation behavior.
Secretary of State John Kerry lecturing Russia's leader Vladimir Putin in Kiev about his apparent de facto annexation of various parts of Ukraine. Who is more 21st century? Is it Kerry or Putin's brash territorial ambitions? Perhaps Kerry's global norms and shared principles idea of international politics is what's outmoded in this century. We will speak about that with former U.S. National Security Advisor Samuel Berger. Also this hour, a tender and thrilling look back at the late astronomer Carl Sagan, who dispelled America's fears of science back in the 20th century, whose mission continues in this century with the launch of the new Cosmos series. Sagan's wife and Cosmos executive producer Ann Druyan will join us. And of polar vortexes and insect die-offs this hour, and how technology has no monopoly on innovative thinking at Toyota. But first, on the Ukraine crisis, joining us is Samuel Berger, former national security advisor under President Clinton. He's now the chair of the Albright-Stonebridge Group, a strategic diplomacy firm in Washington. Mr. Berger, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. It's good to be here.
Where do you think Ukraine stands right now, and are we looking at a new Warsaw Pact line in Crimea all of a sudden with troops from the West facing troops from the East?
Well, I think we're at a delicate moment. I think at this point it's a combination of deterrence and diplomacy. We need to be clear that if he goes further, if he persists in this course, he's going to pay a price. We need to close the door, but we need at this point to keep a window open if we can engage in some discussions in which he decides to bring his troops back to base and de-escalate this. That would be the best result.
Many voices, some predictable voices and also some very responsible academic voices on Russia and Ukraine have argued that the degree of difficulty of this event in the foreign policy legacy of the Obama administration is much, much higher than anything else they've had to deal with up until now, and many have said the administration is simply not prepared for it. How do you see it?
Well, this is a very dangerous situation because we really don't know what Putin's intent is. He has a kind of Russian nationalistic, almost messianic sense. Does he have a greater ambition here? We don't know. We have to assume the worst, prepare for the worst. It obviously is, I think, the largest potential international foreign policy crisis the president has faced because of the larger stakes here, particularly if President Putin moves further into Ukraine.
Although, and not to take Putin's point, and I don't find him to be, you know, any sort of Nobel Prize-winning candidate here for peace or anything else, nevertheless, the Russians have watched NATO acquire nations in Eastern Europe on the other side of the Warsaw Pact line since the fall of the Soviet Union. Didn't at some point the West and the United States and the White House consider, and even this was an issue for President Clinton, that at some point the Russians were going to say, enough, we're done. And saying enough at Ukraine actually makes some historical sense, even as radical as this crisis seems right now. Was the administration prepared for the point at which Putin and Russia would say, enough of this, NATO and the West acquiring these territories?
Well, NATO didn't acquire Ukraine. The Ukrainian people, after Yanukovych tried to cut a deal with Russia, said, no, we don't want to be part of a Russian nexus. We want to be part of a European sphere. They went into the streets. Yanukovych sent the goons after them. Was very violent and created a national furor.
Although fact, an opportunity,
you know, as you look west, John, you know, all of the basically states of Eastern and Central Europe, by and large, are doing well because they have solidified their democracy. They've privatized their economy. They're entering into the modern global economy, and Putin has to at some point understand that that's the future, and Russia needs to be integrated into that global economy if it's going to to grow and not languish behind.
Finally, do you believe that Putin has essentially annexed Crimea right now?
That may be where he's headed. I don't know for we don't know for sure. This is a bit of a pause here. He certainly has, 15 or 16,000 Russian troops there. We'll see where he goes. I think that would be an unacceptable outcome from our perspective. Clearly, Russia has historical, cultural, religious interests in Ukraine, and particularly in Crimea. Very large, 60% of the population, Russian-speaking population. Obviously, large naval base there. That's very important to them. All those interests have to be taken into account, but not by taking over Crimea. And I think there hopefully will be ways to still create some sort of process by which those interests can be taken into account without annexation. But we'll have to see how he plays it at this point.
Sandy Berger, former National Security Advisor under President Clinton. He's now the chair of the Albright-Stonebridge Group, a strategic diplomacy firm in Washington, D.C. Sandy, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Sandy Berger's strategic view from Northwest Washington, the view from Capitol Hill now. Todd Zwillick, takeaway Washington correspondent. Welcome, Todd.
Hi, John.
What's the debate on Capitol Hill regarding a response to what's going on in Ukraine?
There's a surprising amount of unanimity, or at least consensus, emerging along with the White House, John, about what to do in terms of U.S. reaction. But that only goes so far. First, let's start with money. There is an emerging agreement. As John Kerry said when he went over there, look, he had the information in his pocket, $1 billion in U.S. aid directly to the Ukraine for starters, and then some IMF loan guarantees on top of that. Now, after that, it gets complicated when you talk about sanctions and how to deliver them. Listen first to Chris Murphy. He's from Connecticut, and he's chairman of the Europe Foreign Relations Subcommittee.
I believe that Congress should authorize broad authority for President Obama to enact strong sanctions on Russia through penalties to its banks, its oil companies, and its political and economic elite. I believe the president should only be allowed to use this authority in the case that this illegal incursion into Ukraine continues, and that we should give Moscow the opportunity to reverse course or join with the international community to address their concerns about the safety of Russian citizens in Ukraine.
You know, the takeaway here, and it's very, very interesting, is that over the past 15 years, Russia has grown much closer and much more dependent upon the West in financial terms. And so when President Obama says there will be a cost, he's not just bluffing here. There are actual costs. The problem is it's going to hurt more in Europe than in the United States, which is almost energy independent right now.
And that's the difficulty for what Chris Murphy, the senator, was just talking about on the floor, and for what Sandy Berger was just talking about with you. They talk about off-ramps, John. Let's construct these sanctions in a way that tells Putin you can avoid these sanctions if you back off now. You heard Chris Murphy talking about it there. Now, you put your finger on it. The difficulty is Europe. The economic tendrils are so entangled with the West now, which is largely a good thing, that it's becoming difficult for our senators and congressmen and people in the White House to get Europe to come along. I ran into Murphy after he made that statement on the floor, John. You know where he was headed? He was headed back to his office to get on the phone with European parliamentarians, his counterparts in Germany and other countries, to say, hey, guys, you need to join us in these sanctions or we're not going to have a united front and it's going to be useless. What's the difficulty? France gets half its natural gas from Russia. Germany, over a third of its gas. It's fine for the U.S. to say, let's hit Gazprom where they live. The Germans and the French, that would stagger their economy. So you hear the difficulty, John.
And, the Orange Revolution in Ukraine ended when they started to tamper with those Gazprom spigots there in Ukraine that serve Western Europe and the rest of Europe. So, but that's just one of the issues here. In terms of these financial sanctions, do they scare the Russians at all? Do they think the U.S. is bluffing?
Well, John McCain spoke to me about that yesterday. There's an act in the U.S. called the Magnitsky Act. What they do is they pass sanctions sometimes against individual people, in this case, individual Russians, oligarchs, to say they can't move money in the U.S., freeze their bank accounts, they can't spend money here, they don't get visas. And here's what John McCain thinks that will do to Putin. Listen.
Magnitsky scares the hell out of him. Magnitsky scares the daylights out of these oligarchs that love to raise their kids in London and spend time in Las Vegas. And that has really had an effect on the Russians.
And the tangible impact of that statement from John McCain relates to the decline in the ruble. The ruble has fallen off a cliff in this crisis. And so oligarchs trying to shelter their money from problems with the ruble under these sanctions would have nowhere to go.
And it's even more personal than that. Shelter their money, yes. How about shelter their kids? There is a giant cottage industry in London, England in particular, where Russian oligarchs have big houses. They educate their children in British boarding schools to the tune of hundreds of millions of pounds per year in sterling. That's important to the Brits, including their education sector, their banking sector, their real estate sector, which is largely Russian now. So when John McCain gets on the phone and calls up the foreign minister of the UK to say, we need Magnitsky restrictions on Russian oligarchs, they say, sorry, that's a major funding source for us. You can start to see the difficulty in the sanctions that are emerging. Look, we may get an agreement by early next week here in Washington about an aid package and sanctions. That's great. The question now is, how far does it go if the Europeans balk and there's not a united front against Putin in trying to punish him and drive him towards an off-ramp in terms of Ukraine and the Crimea, John?
And although on Britain, we should note that so far, the rhetoric out of London has been very, very strong against Putin. We'll see if that holds. Todd Zwillich, thanks so much.
You bet.
Todd Zwillich, takeaway Washington correspondent.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.